There's a cat tangled in my headphones.
I would never say.
Everybody pause! Everybody pause!
And welcome back to the Bug and a Rug podcast. As always, my name's Caitlin.
As usual, I'm Whitney.
And today we just want to tell you up front that if you want a sticker, let us know.
We're just getting out of the way now.
Let us know.
Coming at it right on.
Yeah, I feel like we keep forgetting and to add it at the end. If you want a sticker, let us know. Please. We have too many.
Please
take. These stickers are ruining my life.
They're everywhere. I'm drowning in them. Actually, I don't know where they are right now. I know they're somewhere.
They're over there, I think.
Oh, they're safe.
They're safe.
So if you want one.
I always keep them in my pocket.
With
I have
a couple of hamburgers.
In my pocket, two hamburgers.
I'm sorry, sir. You need to tell me what's in your pocket right now.
Deburger!
If you've never seen The Pink Panther, that's our movie recommendation for this week.
Did you say, dear God, please stop the car? Stop right now, the car? No?
Forgot about that part.
That's like at the very, very end, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. So, this might be a long one, so do you want to just jump right into it?
Yeah, I've warned Caitlin in advance that I tried to cut it. Wait, why does it say now that it's 7 pages?
Uh-oh.
How did I go from 9 to 7? Wait, pause, please.
Pause, please. Well, you also said that you put size 14 font. I'm worried for your eyeballs. Are you okay? You're changing font size on me.
Well, I forgot I could zoom. So I made all the font really big. So I could see it. And then I was like, wait a minute.
Are you serious?
I did that after I had been writing for 3 hours.
I understand. Your dedication is
admirable.
I was
going
to say impeccable, but that wasn't the right
admirable.
Word. Admirable is the right word.
I know I am.
I need a thesaurus.
I know I am, but what are you?
If you send me a thesaurus, I will send you a sticker in return.
You get all the stickers if you send us a thesaurus. Yes. So this story today, hopefully it won't keep you up at night and you'll still be able to sleep as snug as a bug in a rug, but it's a little dark,
mm-hmm.
It's a little depressing at
mm-hmm.
times,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, you know, I know we're about, most of the time we're here to have a good time, as much as we are to dive into creepy things, but it is a little long. And, I apologize for that. We got this suggestion for today's episode from Seth, mm-hmm. a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and I've been toying with the idea of how to do it justice while still trying to, sift through all the material and pare it down to what is comfortable for our episode length.
Yeah.
If you're really interested in today's topic, I will let you know where you can get more information on podcasts that go into much greater depth and do, 6-part series on it.
Okay.
So, here we go.
Without further ado,
I'm gonna keep stalling.
I know, that's what I'm like, what are we doing here?
I always do. So.
Don't worry, I have this 7-page... story that I'm about to tell you, but let me talk to you about how I feel about this 7-page story for 5 minutes.
Well, that was the first paragraph.
Perfect.
I got it out of line.
Perfect.
We're 1/70th of the way there. So anyway, so you may or may not have heard about these events before, you, Caitlin, and also you, our audience. You can let me know what parts are familiar to you as we go.
Okay.
And the audience can tweet at me about it later.
Live tweet as you listen.
Live tweet as you listen.
That's not how that works, but you know.
At BIAR podcast. So, we are heading home with this story to Morgantown, West Virginia.
What?
You wouldn't call Morgantown home?
No.
It's about 30 minutes from where we grew up.
Yeah.
In our backyard, kind of. Not exactly home, but kind of. So, close. But I was surprised that I didn't know more about this story, considering how close it was to
That city's out there past those county lines.
Out past that county line, they're them different folk. Those folk, they aren't like our folk. Can't trust them.
You can't.
We would have high school basketball games against the high schools in Morgantown, mm-hmm. and they would dress up in overalls and look like farmers because we had, VOTEC classes on our school for slaughterhouse and a lot of people who had farmland.
Mechanicking.
Right. So they dressed up like hicks, and then for some reason our classmates would dress up as, gangsters?
Gang gang.
Like hip-hop rappers.
Well, Morgantown's the city folk.
It's not a huge city.
No, that's what I said. That's why I put that in quotes. The city folk.
Quotes translate well to audio medium.
Yeah, well, I hope it comes across in the inflection of my voice.
Anyway.
I was fine with it. Joke's on them now. Overalls are in style.
Yeah, they're back, aren't they?
They never went anywhere.
Anyway, so if you don't know much about Morgantown, it is the home of West Virginia University, or WVU, which is a big college, mm-hmm. the biggest in West Virginia, which isn't saying much, but they have about 30,000 students.
If you follow college sports, which I don't, but if you do, you've probably watched WVU play at some point, right. in some aspect.
Yeah, they're a D1 school, and they're
pretty
well.
There's a girl that went to the Olympics and got...
She got gold in...
Gold in shooting mm-hmm. rifles.
Yep. Yeah, they do really well in rifles.
Yeah, Virginia Ginny Thrasher won a gold medal in the women's 10-meter air rifle.
Yes, so we've had some students from WVU who went to the Olympics. We didn't go there, nor did we go to the Olympics. That's neither here nor there.
Oh. I could have if I just would have trained a little harder. No, I'm just kidding. I never caught the chicken.
Yeah, I catch a chicken to be fast enough to go to the Olympics. Yes. That's for boxing. Yeah. Is that a cross-country and track training device?
No, absolutely not. I made that up.
Well, maybe if you're an Olympian, it is.
Yeah, but if you watch Leap Year, which is my favorite movie in the entire world, he catches the chicken pretty quickly.
Yeah, why'd Rocky have such a hard time?
Yeah, I don't know. Different type of chicken.
He's not from Ireland.
True.
The chickens are more trusting there.
You're absolutely right. Anyway.
Anyway, so the school WVU actually began as Agricultural College of West Virginia and was opened in September of 1867. The name was changed to West Virginia University the next year by the school's first president, Reverend Alexander Martin. So he got elected president. The school opened, and the very next year he was like, we should change the
name.
We
need to rebrand. We need to rebrand.
Yeah, so he just wrote a letter to the governor and was like, we should change the name. Yeah. And they were like, let's put it to a vote. And then they changed it.
Sure, why not?
So in 1968, it officially became West Virginia University.
Sure.
So we're going to jump forward to the year 1970.
Okay.
Where our story is going to take place. In 1970, construction began on WVU's Coliseum, which is the indoor arena for basketball, mm-hmm. gymnastics, and some other indoor collegiate activities.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a Coliseum. Like a Roman.
Yes.
That's why it's called that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just so everybody knows.
Yes, that's a good description of it. It looks like a Roman Coliseum.
Well, yeah, I'm serious. If you're picturing
that,
it kind
of
does.
Does it have a name, or is it the Coliseum? Anyway, also this year, construction began on the Personal Rapid Transit System, or PRT. Yes?
I'm sorry.
You got a problem?
They've never stopped construction on that, because I've never been, but that's all I hear about from people that go. I've been on it, twice. But the only thing I ever hear about people who go to WVU is the PRT is broken again.
Can you explain what the PRT is to the listeners?
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. So, quick description. The campus is split up into different parts, technically, I guess, mm-hmm. in different parts of the city of Morgantown. So, mm-hmm. it's not all on one, square piece of land that you can walk to each building. So, the PRT was created in order for people to kind of... It's like a... monorail system, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little tram.
Like a little tram.
And lifted up off the ground, so it's not on the roadway.
Yeah, it's like above the roads. It's on like its own thing. It's a very slow roller coaster.
Yeah.
Sure.
It looks like, it looks exactly like the kind of roller coasters you see that go around the outside of a park.
Yeah.
It's exactly like that.
Right. So it just takes you from different points of the city in order for people to go to different parts of the campuses. Mm-hmm. If they can't drive or don't want to drive or, you know, can't catch the bus at the right time.
Yeah.
It runs like constantly, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. Didn't want to get in traffic. There's not a lot of places to park for in some student buildings.
Right.
But before the PRT, well, first of all, it's always broken.
Yeah.
It's always broken now.
Mm-hmm.
So my question was going to be, what do you think students did prior to the PRT being built? But it's never working, so what do you think the options were in the 70s? What do you think the popular stuff was?
Honestly, I feel like it would just be like, I mean, what I would do was be like, you find somebody with a car
mm-hmm.
that has the same class as you, try to be buddy-buddy with them.
Yeah.
But, like, it could, I mean, you might not be friends. It could just be like, oh, we got class together. Can you pick me up? And sure. I'll pay you for gas.
Yeah. So, driving with a friend, walking, and actually hitchhiking was the big the big thing for students then. And it was actually very popular in the 60s and 70s for mm-hmm. people to be hitchhiking, or what they called thumbing, not just on WVU campus, but like
all over
in general.
Yeah.
I would assume all across the nation. It was just a way you got around.
Mm-hmm.
People trusted other people to be decent mm-hmm. humans, and people would stop and pick them up.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like now people aren't. I don't know. I would never hitchhike, but I also think it's more of like,
I don't think it's legal now.
I don't think so. But I also don't think it's as popular because people won't do it. Like, people won't pick people up.
No. People are nervous about picking people up.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it seems like. Or at least I always am.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was instilled in me somehow. Not that I don't want to. I mean, I always feel
bad.
Well,
there's that movie, The Hitcher.
We used to watch the movie The Hitcher a lot.
Isn't that where he ties the guy to
two semi-trucks?
And, yeah.
And then he pulls them apart?
Pulls them apart, yeah.
We watched that movie, and I think I watched that scene with my eyeballs once.
I don't think I ever watched it.
And afterwards, I was like, oh, I gotta pee. And I'd, like, go to the bathroom or, like, just not physically watch it.
Yeah.
We used to watch that with Molly and Aaron mm-hmm. all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought about that when I was writing this.
Yeah.
And I don't want to think about it because I don't want to think about that guy getting pulled apart.
Yeah.
Wild
stuff. That's why we don't hitchhike.
If you yes, that's no. You know what? Yes.
So I don't pick up hitchhikers.
I don't hitchhike, not because it's illegal.
Right.
If you've ever seen the movie The Hitcher, if you haven't, watch it. Look away at that scene. Sorry for the spoilers. If you have seen it, tweet at us.
We'll send you a sticker.
We'll send you a sticker for your pain, for the emotional damage that the movie caused you.
It's you, yeah.
So anyway, that's just how people kind of got around. Unfortunately, it wasn't the safest form of transit.
I mean,
it's not now. It wasn't really then. And that kind of brings us to our story today.
Okay.
Merritt Malerick and Karen Farrell were halfway into their freshman year in January of 1970.
Hold on. Mary?
Merritt.
Merritt Malerick
mm-hmm.
and
Karen Farrell.
Karen Farrell. Sorry, I just want to get their names right.
Sure. So Merritt's M-A-R-E-D and Karen is.
Karen.
How you would imagine. K-A-R-E-N. I shouldn't
crazy.
Assume. There's no silent.
My name's Michael with a B. And I've been afraid of insects my whole life. Stop. Where's the B?
There's a B? Yeah, there's no, like, silent E-I-G-H in the middle. And Malerick, I saw spelled a couple different ways, but
oh,
I think it's
fine.
M-A-L-A-R-I-K.
Okay.
So, anyway, they were halfway through their freshman year in January of 1970, and they were pretty good friends from what, I don't know if they were roommates. They were roommates. I'm not sure. But they were pretty good friends, and they had gone down to the Metropolitan Theater on January 18th to see Oliver.
Hmm.
Obviously, there was no real transportation service offered from the campus back to the dorms,
mm-hmm.
as we talked about before, because the PRT just started being built. Maybe not even this early, because
yeah.
it's January.
Well, the campus probably wasn't as spread out as it is now.
Right.
I'm assuming.
Right. But they still decided they were going to hitchhike back to their rooms that evening.
Okay.
Again, this is very common for students to do at the time, And it was reported that the girls were seen getting into a cream-colored Chevy with a man who looked to be in his early 40s with blonde hair. This was January 18th, like I said, and was the last time the girls were seen alive.
Poof, 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 poof.
Poof, 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 poof. Poof.
Never trust a blonde-haired man.
In a cream-colored Chevy. If I know anything.
In his early 40s.
If I know anything.
What my grandpappy always told me.
What is it? Never trust a...
bunny.
Never trust a bunny.
Never trust a bunny.
It's a frog.
Hoodwinked. I told you this last time. It's the wolf. He goes, never trust a bunny. And then his partner, the squirrel, goes, never trust a bunny.
I hope you guys take notes of all the movies that we mention. Mm-hmm. And it'd be like a good bingo game.
Yeah. You're right.
So anyway.
Okay. August. No. January 18th.
Right. 1970.
1970. Married. And mm-hmm. Karen go to the movie theater.
Yep.
Downtown.
Downtown.
Right?
Cruising through the alley. Tiptoe.
Stop. I'm asking a question.
Yes.
And then they need to get back to their rooms. Mm-hmm. But it's, depending on where they live, it's way too far to walk.
Correct. And it's January. It's cold.
And it's cold. And it's probably late. And it might be snowing. Mm-hmm. So they do what everybody does at this time and is catch a ride.
Between 9 and 11.
Yeah.
P.M.
Yeah. So it's late.
Yes.
Yeah, they decide to catch a ride. I mean, hitchhiking was the old Uber, I guess.
Hitchhiking was the old Uber.
I mean, like, that's just how people did it. Okay, and so they went missing.
Car.
They got in a car, a cream-colored car, with
poof.
A blonde-haired man poof, poof, in his poof. Early 40s.
Poof, poof, poof.
Right.
Short hair. Short hair blonde man.
Mm-hmm.
Early 40s.
Yep.
And then poof. Gone.
Mm-hmm. The whole car.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Vanished right there.
It was
up
actually
in smoke.
Houdini.
It was the Batmobile. Not the Batmobile. The
Boatmobile?
The Boatmobile.
Jesus Christ. Jack's going to be so mad at you for that one.
He's not here, is he?
No, you're lucky.
I am.
Okay, so.
So anyway, rewards were posted by their folks and their parents, their folks, and the authorities
okay.
asking for information or leads to their disappearance, and police investigators assured Merritt's family that a thorough investigation was underway shortly after their disappearance.
Okay. I was going to say, do you know how long, like, they went, do you know how long it was before their parents were like, oh, shit, like, we can't find our kids?
It was pretty apparent. I think they didn't show up to class.
Oh.
And also, some reports say that...
like, the friends were like, oh, where's these people? People were talking.
Another thing was that Merritt was supposed to have a dentist appointment the next day, so it might have been she didn't show up for
didn't
that.
Go. Okay, okay, yeah,
so
yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
another thing that might have triggered the,
sure.
the search.
Yeah. The parents put out flyers and a reward?
Yeah, it was a $3,500 award, which wasn't a lot.
Well, the first reward's never going to be like $1 million anyway.
Correct. So, as far as progress, there wasn't much.
Okay. It's not a lot to go on.
No. So, nothing helpful or concrete came about until April, which was 3 months
damn.
Later.
Well, it's tough, because it's like, yeah, it's a cream-colored car, we didn't catch a license plate, we don't know who he was.
And people hitchhike all the time, so
yeah.
people don't think, oh, I should look and see, because those
who
young
it
girls
yeah,
are getting
yeah.
into that
exactly.
car.
Exactly. Okay, so we'll cut to April.
So April 6th, a cryptic letter was sent to the West Virginia State Police that read, "Gentlemen, I have some information on the whereabouts of the bodies of the two missing West Virginia University co-eds, Merritt Malerick and Karen Farrell." Co-eds is a term that I had to look up to make sure I understood the definition.
Okay.
But it's basically a girl, a young woman, who attends a co-gender university. So, like, it was probably a term that came about because there are all male schools and all female schools, but these are women going to an institution where there's both.
Yeah, but what are the men called?
Probably also co-eds. I think it's, like, young people, but I don't know.
Okay.
Mostly women. I can read you the exact definition.
No, no,
but
I get it.
Saying,
I get it.
Like, it was a weird thing because
yeah.
we don't use that term a whole lot, but
yeah.
this is what...
Sure. It meant.
They say that a lot.
Okay.
So, yes. So, anyway... The two missing West Virginia University co-eds, Merritt Malerick and Karen Farrell, follow directions very carefully to the nth degree and you cannot fail to find them. Proceed 25 miles directly south from the southern line of Morgantown. This will bring you to a wooded forest land. Enter into the forest exactly 1 mile. There are the bodies. 25 plus 1 equals 26 miles total. Will reveal myself when the bodies are located. Sincerely, Triangle. And there's a picture of a triangle. That was how they signed it.
I have so many problems with this letter already. Please. I don't get how, like, bad guys are like, follow these instructions to a T and you'll find them. Go south on the road, directly south on a map. Like, what? Like, you know what I mean? Because from it's Morgantown. Like, take interstate whatever, south. That's going to be different than if you look at a map and go directly south.
Yeah, and from what point do you start?
Where do you start? Yeah.
If you're looking at a map of Morgantown and you draw a horizontal line across the bottom, yeah. Which part on that horizontal line do you start from to go south?
Directly south? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's why I'm like, follow this to the nth degree. Okay, bud.
Yeah. Dumb. Anyway, this letter was published in the newspapers on April 10th.
Oh.
On the 14th, the governor at the time, Arch Moore, ordered a search based on the letter's instructions. Now, this makes me angry. And I have a note about this.
Wait, what?
Because they published the letter, and then on the 14th, he sent... Because they didn't know whether to take it seriously, I guess.
Who did the letter go to?
The police!
Jesus Christ.
But nobody decided to do anything until the governor's like, yes, we should have a search based on the letter's instructions.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
If I was the parent, I'd be like, oh, see ya.
I know, I'd already be... And that's the thing. You published in the newspaper... 4 days before the search.
So who knows who went down there before that?
Yeah, that's okay. What I'm thinking.
Oh my god, alright. I'm mad. I'm pissed.
So was I. And you wonder why I made the font bigger instead of zooming when I was done with this. I was a little twisted. Anyway, by the time that they actually sent a search party, a second letter was sent to this with the same instructions, but with, quote, more urgency. Right, the second letter, I don't know what it said. I couldn't find it. I looked for a while, but everything says it was with more urgency, but basically the same instructions.
Yeah.
Again, signed with the triangle and sent to the state police.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the 14th, the governor gave the order, and the state police and National Guard followed the instructions-ish. Yeah. And they came across a strange and disturbing scene. Somewhere south of Morgantown, depending on what source you read, they found a tomb of stones and limbs that were discovered with two bodies inside that were thought to be the missing girls. Now, this could have been 8 to 10 miles from where the letter actually told them to go. It was like the letter...
Because the letter said 20-some miles.
Right. It was weird.
Okay, interesting.
It wasn't exactly where the letter said, but it was in the general area.
Yeah.
Anyway, they found this tomb, which was very strange. It was like big slabs of rock that looked like they'd been pulled up from the nearby river.
Okay.
And then big tree limbs. When they found the bodies, the heads had been removed from each of the girls, and they could not find their heads anywhere at the scene.
Okay, so let me split. No, too much. Let me sum up. So they went at some number of miles south of Morgantown to find what was described as a funeral pyre.
Mm-hmm.
Pyre.
Yes.
Made from tree limbs and rocks that were brought up from this river. When they took all this stuff away, I'm assuming they found the two bodies of what they presumed were the young girls.
Mm-hmm.
But these bodies were missing the heads.
Correct.
Was that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Like,
they weren't missing anything else, like... I know this sounds terrible, but, like, hands or...
Their limbs were still intact.
Okay, because some people do, like, identification stuff.
Sure, their limbs were still intact. One body was wearing overalls, and the other body was nude from the waist down.
Hmm.
And they were both wearing gloves.
Hmm.
Which was, I mean, it was cold, so I don't know if it was the gloves that were theirs.
They had on, yeah.
Some resources also say that the girls' belongings, like from their purses or whatever they were carrying, were found scattered along the nearby roadside.
Interesting.
And that's how they knew, oh, we should check into the woods this way.
Damn, really? And they went missing in January, and they still had all their stuff. Or the person still had all... Okay.
Yeah. So, the papers reported a quote from the prosecuting attorney, Joe Laurita, L-A-U-R-I-T-A, who said, quote, I have authorized an autopsy on the two bodies that were discovered. The autopsy will be conducted by the staff of WVU Hospital to determine, if possible, the cause of death.
Okay.
The Monongalia County Coroner, William Bowers, who, his name will come up a little bit, so Bowers, B-O-W-E-R-S.
Okay.
Said that the bodies were so badly decomposed that he could not determine whether the girls had been shot or stabbed. Okay. He was not able to tell whether the cuts through the girls' necks were clean due to the level of decomposition. He did state that animals could not have caused the decapitation because the security that the tomb provided
kept them pretty walled off. Right. So they would have had to have been missing their heads before they were put in the tomb.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Other things of note were that there was a significant lack of blood on either of their clothing.
They were washed. Or they were
there
killed.
There was no stains, there was
they
no
were
blood.
Killed without their clothes on, redressed, washed, redressed.
Maybe. Or the heads were taken after they were dead, so they wouldn't have bled.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
The paper also reported that the delicate process and the level of extreme care taken to remove the remains by the police was just, like, painstaking. Like, they were super careful when they took everything away and removed the girls' bodies. Mm-hmm. They took step-by-step pictures of everything that they did so they could have as much information as possible.
Right. So he was basically saying that police wouldn't have messed with anything.
They were super thorough.
Yeah.
It is what... the newspaper reported,
okay.
Anyway.
That's a good summary.
Yeah. So, Bauer said the bodies had been side by side, overlapping each other, and were hidden in the tomb. So, okay. Basically, their arms were overlapping, and I think one of the girls' legs was over top of the other.
Sure. Well, depending on how big it is, you're going to have to squeeze
be overlapping it. Somehow. But he said, if I would have been walking past, I probably wouldn't have even noticed that they were there. State Police Captain W.F. Bowley, B-O-W-L-E-Y, said that searchers located the bodies only because 1 foot of one of the girls was partially exposed to view. So, basically, they saw something that looked amiss.
Yeah. Well, they might have been like, well, here's their belongings, let's go into the wood, everybody spread your arms out, and just, like, walk a straight line, and then somebody was like, that looks weird.
And that's how search parties usually
are.
Yeah,
they get, like, grid by grid.
You basically take an arm's length... wingspan, mm-hmm. and that's your block.
Yeah.
So the state police captain Bowley also stated that he saw clothes on both girls and claimed they were fully clothed, despite the coroner, Mr. Bowers, reporting that Miss Farrell was unclothed from the waist down and the pelvic area was so decomposed that it was impossible to tell whether there had been a sexual assault.
Whoa, Kimosabi.
We got one person saying they were both fully clothed. And then the coroner said, no, she was nude from the waist down.
Well, if the police did such a thorough whatever of the bodies, they took pictures? They documented this?
So I think the problem is a lot of the quotes are from newspapers right after it happened, not necessarily from...
the reports.
The case report.
Okay.
Right. I'll tell you if it's from a case report, but most of this, I should have specified, is like...
No, still, that's like a pretty big thing that she would forget. That she either didn't have pants or had pants.
Yeah. I mean, he was questioned about whether or not... He's like... They're like, but the coroner said she was missing clothes. And he's like, I saw clothes. His quote was, I saw clothes.
Okay. All right.
So I think he was
okay,
just...
Okay, bud. Sure.
I don't think he wanted the press in his face while he was dealing with this.
No, I get it.
But
again, that leads into a whole different thing. Like, if she didn't have pants on, well...
Was
it could have been something, yeah, like it could have been something completely different.
Yeah. So anyway, that was, it's just one mess on top of another.
Mm-hmm.
On April the 17th, the Dominion News, might be Dominion Post now.
Okay.
Because that's a familiar newspaper name to me. But a local paper reported that the county coroner reported the bodies were found in a tomb made of slabs of stone pulled away from a nearby creek. The tomb was built with rocks and limbs, much like a funeral pyre. The speculation was that such an elaborate burial was suggestive of a ritual killing, and rumors swirled of satanic influence.
Oh, really?
Now, this is a newspaper saying that. I don't know if the investigators themselves
said that. Yeah.
Said that. But that's what the newspaper is reporting.
Heads removed. Elaborate burial.
Could be anything.
Especially
if they can't determine the cause of death.
Could just be someone that was super obsessed with them and then killed them and was like, oh my god, what have I done? And then made a big thing.
Yeah, it could have been a sign of remorse, I suppose. Yeah. So on April 21st, a third letter was sent to the police. Gentlemen, I have delayed writing another letter in hopes you would conclude more information by this time concerning finding of the bodies. Since this has not substantially happened, I will send along another clue while your men are still in the area. The heads can be found from the position of the bodies by striking out 10 degrees southwest for the first head and approximately 10 degrees southeast for the second head, roughly 1 mile. You are already 7/10 of that mile. They are within the mine entrance, if you can call it an entrance considering its condition. They are buried not over 1 foot in depth. The ones responsible for the murders scattered some of the girls' personal effects over the general area, creating a pattern of confusion, making it difficult for you to pinpoint any exact location. My first two letters triggered your intensive search. Don't give up now. Sincerely, Triangle.
Who is this Triangle?
So, this is very confusing to me, because they're saying the first head is approximately 10 degrees southeast, or 10 degrees southwest for the first head and 10 degrees southeast for the second, roughly 1 mile. What does that mean?
Each?
But then it says you're 7/10 of that mile already.
Right. They're in the mine entrance. Well, you just said they're two different directions.
Yeah. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. Now, they were near...
a triangle.
Maybe it did make a triangle. That makes sense.
Head, body.
Yeah.
Bodies. I can't make a triangle with my hands. I'm making a diamond, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, they were near... this is actually closer to Grafton than what the original letter had kind of led them to.
Okay.
But there were mines there. I believe it's the Weirton Mine. We'll talk about it later. But this area was searched, and there were miners in the area that helped in the search.
Sure, because they knew the area.
Right.
Did they find the heads?
No. Subsequent searches turned up absolutely nothing.
Oh.
So the West Virginia Maryland State Police turned to the letters for handwriting analysis using a list of names submitted by the Associated Press.
Wait, what? Mm-hmm. They did handwriting analysis based on a list of suspects?
The Associated Press sent in handwriting samples, I think.
Of things who?
I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, people that they, like, all the handwriting they had, or if it's, like, people that they thought could be involved.
Oh, okay.
It's very strange. It just says, submitted by the Associated Press.
Yeah.
Now, again, this is a lot of, like, things pulled from newspapers, so yeah. It's not a full...
No, I got you.
...background of sort. But anyway, yeah. This is what they decided to do. It could have been like, if you think you know who sent this, send us in.
Have them write down on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Triangle, triangle, I love peanuts.
Yeah, how you draw your triangle convicts you of the murder. So, the identity was kept from the public until September, when it was revealed that the letters had been authored by more than one members of a religious cult.
How do they know this?
It was a handwriting comparison. Reverend Richard Warren Hoover, who led the Psychic Science Church in Cumberland, Maryland, and had up to 30 members in his following, was one of the people who they then went to.
And then went to?
They went to him. To
for
talk
help?
About it. No. They went to him to talk about, you sent these letters.
Oh, God, okay.
We think you sent these letters. He said that Fred W. Shanning had consulted the Reverend, he was one of the members, consulted the Reverend about the missing girls. And the Reverend allegedly deduced their whereabouts through several tape-recorded seances where he claimed to place himself into a trance and channel a 19th-century physician named Dr. Spencer from London. The spirit would describe the perpetrators as a 5'7" black male from West Virginia and a white male with blue eyes and blonde hair who belonged to a cult that sacrificed the girls for a satanic ritual. These tape recordings were dictated to Shanning's niece, who was never identified in the papers. I don't know if it's because she's a minor. And she wrote the letters and mailed them for Hoover and Shanning. These three authors were cleared of any involvement after a thorough police investigation, but were the authors of the letters.
I'm not going to lie. I freaked out in the beginning. I was like, they went for him for help? Because I was like, this is going to be some BS psychic who calls in and says they know where the bodies are. And then you said, no. They came to him to compare handwriting analysis. And I was like, great, he knows something. He did it. But you know what? joke's on me because it was some psychic bullshit and I am mad now.
How dare you not believe in the 19th century Dr. Spencer from London?
First of all, why is that doctor here? Like, why is he haunting this place? Why does he know? And once again, ghosts are so powerful. If you can come in through a human being and tell them where the bodies are and describe the men completely, why can't you give a name?
Also, why are you 8 to 10 miles off of your location?
There we go again. Thank you. Okay. I think the police just were like, south, okay, and then just got lucky.
Maybe.
I'm mad.
About which part?
I think, hear me out, I believe in psychics. I believe that seances can be held. I don't really care for it when it's like, here are the perpetrators. I've described them completely. One is 5'7" and one has blue eyes. Do you need any more information?
Yes, I need you to tell a sketch artist exactly what they look like.
Right, and then if I was the police,
and
I would
then they
like,
go, guys are so sick.
If I was the police, I would be like, let's get this seance business on right now. I brought my own candles. Like,
let me hear the tapes.
Let's go. Like, what happened?
I don't know.
Well, clearly nothing came of it.
What are you talking about? They found the bodies.
No, well, I mean, suspect-wise.
No, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until 6 years later that the West Virginia police had their next lead.
Because they had that guy do another seance.
No.
Why didn't they have them do a seance?
You just got mad because you said they shouldn't be doing seances.
And no, I'm fine with it. But if they're gonna do that,
if you're gonna help, then help.
If you're gonna help, then help. If you're gonna help, then you're gonna help right now, and we're gonna have one right now. Let Dr. Spencer come into my body, and I want to see it for myself.
You don't invite him in.
I keep thinking of Spencer from Criminal Minds.
Dr. Spencer Reed? Yes. Yep. Anytime.
Anyway.
So anyway, 6 years later.
I apologize that I yelled.
In 1976, the West Virginia State Police were contacted by law enforcement officials in Camden, New Jersey. They reported that Eugene Paul Clausen, an inmate charged with the rape of a 13-year-old girl and forcing a 15-year-old boy to perform sex acts on him at gunpoint, claimed that he was the perpetrator of the 1970 murders of Marin and Karen. He had reportedly been having nightmares, which prompted him to confess. An expert from one of his questioning sessions read, when he was asked about these nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
Headless girls, and I could hear them, you know, begging, and they just tortured me. And I used to not sleep well at all. And I was on heavy medications and stuff because I couldn't sleep because of the nightmares.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense. It sounds like he's crazy, like rambling to me, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, his 73-page confession stated that he had kidnapped the girls by gunpoint, took them to a secluded spot where he handcuffed one and raped the other in the back seat, switched them, raped again, and then forced them to perform sex acts on each other before having them redress and shooting them in the head. He said he then cut their heads off with his brother's machete before burying them in the woods. He claimed that he had taken their heads to show his brother, but when his brother was at home, he threw them into a ravine along with the gun near Point Marion, Pennsylvania, where he grew up, and also might have thrown this machete down there too.
Does he look like the guy that picked them up in the car?
No, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay. Wait. No, I won't go off again. Continue.
He was brought to Morgantown from New Jersey, and he's brought to Morgantown and to Point Marion, PA, to search for the victims' heads. Miners were also asked to join in the search, and cameras were employed to scan the trenches. Hair from an animal nest and some handcuffs were collected and sent to evidence. The court documents state, and this is from one of the court documents, as we have earlier noted, the hair analysis expert had conceded that because of the lack of sufficient known samples of victims' hair, he was unable to determine whether the hair found in the nest matched the victim's hair. His testimony essentially was that the hair from the nest was human hair and it came from two separate sources. He was also able to state that microscopic examination that as two groups of nest hair were certain similarities and that the hair found in one of the victim's pocketbook and on the clothing belonging to both of the victims by way of natural color and dye characteristics.
Interesting.
It's, so he's saying it could be the same.
Yeah.
But I can't say that for sure.
Well, it's tough for a couple reasons. One, when people who are already convicted of something confess to other things, you have to think about the possibility that, like, they're saying it to get attention. They're saying it to get switched prisons. They have mental issues going on that they either truly believe that they did it or they are just, like, making it up. You know what I mean? Like, it's there's a number of things. And especially, like, if he was going to court or he was looking at, you know, a lot of trouble for his prior convictions, he could have said this to get that delayed or to push back a time or, you know what I mean? Fame. It could be anything. But the other interesting thing is that apparently some of what he said kind of matched up because he told them to look there and they found things. But also, it's been 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you... It's tough. Mm-hmm. This could be anybody's handcuffs.
A lot of people... Listen, a lot of people use handcuffs for a lot of things.
Things, exactly.
And there's been a lot of police in that area, so who's to say they didn't
Drop their...
Hair?
Official handcuffs that were registered to them. I don't know how it works.
6 years later... You're telling me that some police officers don't sometimes lose their handcuffs, and in order to not get in trouble for losing their handcuffs, they go and buy some handcuffs, and they don't have the official handcuffs anymore.
I hope that doesn't happen. Probably also, not. This is why I don't clean out my hairbrush.
One of the cats just meowed in agreement. I just took a DNA test. Turns out that's a lot of hair that matches my brush. What?
Exactly.
Anyway.
Cheers to that.
So, kind of playing into your suspicions, a few months later, Clausen tried retracting his confession by saying he heard about the girl's story in magazines, and his cellmate helped him make up the confession because he thought he could get out of jail time in New Jersey once he was acquitted from the West Virginia case.
How would he get out of jail time for that? If he lied about it and they figured that out, he would get more jail time added.
I don't think he was a very bright person.
Okay.
He said he added the sexual component to sound more believable. When he retracted his confession, he asked to ingest sodium pentothal, which is also known as truth serum. Basically what happens
is... This guy's just a terrible person.
It slows the speed at which your body sends messages from your spinal cord to your brain, and as a result, it makes it more difficult to perform high-functioning tasks, such as concentrating on a single activity, like walking in a straight line or even lying. It's this concentration that you need to think up a lie, and the truth serum basically, like, takes that away.
Sure.
So he went into, he's like, I'll even take a truth serum, and they're like, nah.
This guy's just a piece of garbage.
And his lawyer was like, no.
Yeah.
So, why should we be suspicious that it wasn't Clausen? Why should we say, okay, he probably didn't do it? Well, Clausen had long hair and was in his 30s, whereas witnesses said a short-haired man in their 40s is who the girls were last seen with.
Well, 30s or 40s.
His sexual assault claims...
Tomato, tomato.
...were kind of inconclusive evidence because Pharrell's body, who was the one who was not clothed from the waist down...
Allegedly.
Was too badly decompensated. Decomposed.
Decomposed.
Thank you. Decomposed.
You have it written down in your notes.
I have inconclusive evidence based on decomposition. Okay. No, I stopped writing full sentences at this point because I was tired.
Okay, right. So they can't really say anything.
Right. To and that. There was no evidence of abuse on Malorick's body.
Okay.
So the hair samples could not have been... They didn't look like they were pulled out of someone's head. They looked like they were cut. And a local beautician in the area where the bodies were found admitted to using a garbage dump nearby to dispose of her hair clippings. So the... These were later.
So it could have been anything. So it could have been anybody's.
Anybody's hair.
Yeah.
Clausen was said to have Klinefelter syndrome, which is where instead of an XY chromosome, he would have had an XXY chromosome.
Okay.
This is a This has a multiple implications. One of it is they're usually infertile because they can't have trouble getting an erection, basically.
Okay.
They have trouble with sexual acts because of their, like, genetic makeup.
Sure.
So, some experts say that he could not have executed the excessive sexual methods he claimed in his statement without the use of hormones, which he was not taking until after the murders occurred. He didn't have access to them until after.
Okay.
I just thought that was more interesting than anything. His defense also involved a calculation time, which would have been nearly impossible. So his original statement said that he got off at work in Philadelphia at 2:30 p.m. and drove to his mom's in Point Marion, Pennsylvania, which is a 5-hour drive.
Oh, so yeah, I was going to say, hold on.
So 5 hours. Then he hitchhiked up to Pittsburgh after leaving his car at his mother's, which would have taken about an hour and a half. Unless he was delayed by waiting to be picked up, because you don't get picked up as a hitchhiker by the first car that passes you by necessarily. Then he stole a car from Pittsburgh and drove back to Morgantown, which is another hour and a half.
Yeah, he went past Morgantown the first time.
Yeah.
Why did he go to Pittsburgh?
Throw him off his scent. I don't know. So, this would have been another hour and a half, plus the time it took to steal the car. He said in his statement he picked the girls up at 9. So you're telling me 2:30 plus 5-hour drive to Point Marion, that's 7:30. Another hour and a half would put you at 9 o'clock, but you still need another hour and a half at least to get him back to Morgantown.
Minimum.
So that puts you at 10:30.
Yeah.
Now, some witnesses say that the girls were seen being picked up at 11. His statement said 9.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it doesn't work out. Math. Math's not. Math's hard. I get it, bud, but
I don't think math's Clausen's thing.
Yeah. Math's Listen, hard, but that's not.
I know it's not our thing either, but I don't think it's his thing.
I don't think it's his thing.
There's a cat having a good old time with a box, and I don't know if you guys can hear it in the background.
Definitely can.
She's having a wild... She's having a little frolic down there. Anyway... another piece of information that didn't quite fit was that he stated he had borrowed his mother's brother's machete and then was coming back to show him the heads, even though supposedly his brother was stationed in the military in Guantanamo Bay at the time.
He forgot.
That's why he wasn't there. He was like, oh, bro's not home. Why is he taking heads on to show his brother?
Well, my thought was you go through all that trouble and then just he's not there and you're like, guess I'll throw him in a ravine. Like you go through all that trouble, you wouldn't just like put him in a freezer.
Oh my god. Oof. I was insane. He probably realized his brother was in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah,
I was
like, oh, shit. Gotta get rid of these hot potato.
I'm gonna be back here back for a while. Anyway, despite recanting his confession and a huge lack of actual evidence saying he did, I don't know what to do with the sounds of this cat.
What's wrong with you? What are you doing?
She's clearly playing with the box. What do you mean? The new cat, everybody.
Okay, go ahead.
She doesn't need a bell collar to interrupt our podcast.
Oh my god.
So despite this lack of evidence and the recanting of his confession, Clausen was convicted and sentenced to life in prison in 1976.
They just needed somebody to have done it.
He appealed to the state Supreme Court, stating that there's not sufficient evidence and some of the photos of the scene were too gruesome and inflammatory to the hearing. So basically he was saying he thinks that once the jury saw those photos, they were like, this is disgusting. Those
Yeah, they wanted somebody to blame. Right, they needed somebody to do it.
Right. So
he's a terrible person and he needs to be in prison, but I don't necessarily think he did this.
Well, the state Supreme Court ordered or held up his what he said, and he was ordered a retrial in 1981, but it was scheduled in Randolph County, West Virginia, to avoid the prejudice that might have been there if he had it in Morgantown.
Sure.
Which he
biased
says,
jury.
Right, right. Now, if you read through the court documents, which I read through some of them, another thing that he was saying was that he didn't have a lawyer present during his confession. Oh. But, like, they show multiple times where they read him his Miranda rights, and he, like, they were recording his confession, and they said, do you want a lawyer? And he's like, no. And they're like,
do you want a lawyer?
You know you have the right to a lawyer. And he's like, okay. But okay. he still kept going for 73 pages, 72 or 73 pages.
Yeah.
Apparently, although I can't find these exact words, he was again convicted and remained incarcerated until his death in 2009. So I can't find the actual sentence. He was still convicted, but he remained incarcerated until his death in 2009.
Oh, shit. I wasn't expecting that.
And he still proclaimed his innocence until he...
Really?
Like, died. Yes.
Huh.
So, he was not the only one who himself was not the only one who thought he was innocent. I know that's a weird sentence.
Yeah.
But there were people who believed he did not do it.
Right.
Richard Hall was one of the lead investigators during Clausen's confession. He testified he didn't believe Clausen's confession, and he didn't believe he was the killer. Mm. But it's his job to record the confession.
Yeah.
Now, Hall is retired from his official duty.
Investigation job.
Yes, but he still spends retirement investigating these murders.
He's a PI!
He's basically a PI for this case.
Hell yeah.
And he says on his own he believes... He has his own idea of who it is.
Sure, of course. I mean, anybody who's going to... I feel like in every case, there's somebody... Like, every cold case, there's, like, retired investigators that are like, no, I've spent years of my life on this. I know exactly who did it and why.
And he won't say who. He will say he believes it was a fellow WVU student of the girls, but he won't give a name.
Why? Son of a bitch!
He's trying to pull it all together. He's trying to make sure he has evidence.
No, absolutely
can't scare him
not.
Off. Can't let him know you're onto him. He wasn't the
put
only
him on blast.
He wasn't the only law enforcement official who thought Clausen was not responsible. Robert Mozingo was a sergeant in charge of the case up until 1971, so only for a year.
Okay.
And he reported that there was a lot of transfers happening. And then Preston B. Gooden, G-O-O-D-E-N. Preston Gooden was actually fired in 1971 for alleging that the governor's office was interfering with their investigation. Governor Moore, his administration was like full of scandal that I can't even begin to get into.
We got an inside job.
No, not necessarily. But what he was saying was, you know, they keep transferring people, and we're not able to get anything done.
You wrote this up last week. Tim got fired yesterday. So now we have a new person that has to read all of Tim's notes.
Right.
And rethink the whole thing.
And, I mean, this guy, Gooden, actually got fired for saying that he thought they were interfering. He said that the governor's administrator, Norman Yost, suggested that Police Sergeant Larry L. Harold should hide reports that they actually lied to the Malerick family originally when they said that they had started an investigation shortly after the girls went missing. They weren't doing anything.
Well, that's what I said at the beginning. So this it's coming out now that they didn't start an investigation and that the governor is telling this specific police officer to...
Well, not the governor, but one of his administrators told the police officer...
So someone in the government's office hide those reports that say we didn't...
Actually do it.
Because they didn't. Well, that's what I said. Because it was after the newspaper article came out that they even went to go look for the bodies.
Yeah, they weren't doing anything. They actually weren't doing much as far as investigation until some of the WVU students actually were threatening to protest because of the lack of progress.
Well, you have to think, too, if this happens to these two girls, people hitchhike all the time, the police aren't doing anything, who's to say it's not going to happen again?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they're worried. You know, these were our classmates. Where are they?
Yeah.
You should be trying to find them.
Right.
So it was all a big mess, a whole big scandal. This governor actually... had his law license revoked after he was in office. Mm-hmm. Like, he ended up with a bunch of bad stuff going on. So, like, this was not his only problem.
Yeah.
There are many other people who think Clausen was, in fact, innocent. There is, as I mentioned at the beginning, a 6-part podcast series called Merritt and Karen WVU Co-Ed Murders, in which Geoff Fuller, who... He was actually at one of Clausen's trials.
Okay.
When Geoff Fuller was in high school, he attended one of these trials.
Sure.
So he's been interested in this for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's from the Morgantown area. And then Sarah McLaughlin and Kendall Perkinson, who is, he does a lot of journalism. He owns Chromatic, or he's a journalist for Chromatic, which is where this podcast is posted.
Sure.
but he does a lot of journalism in the Morgantown area currently.
Okay.
So those three worked together to make this series, mm-hmm. where they did a deep dive into, they went back to old witnesses, they pulled out newspapers, they pulled out court documents, mm-hmm. they went around and retraced the steps of the girls the night they disappeared, and they actually pulled in a forensics teacher at WVU,
sure.
and her whole class, and talked to them about it and had them walk through and cool. give ideas.
Yeah.
So that's actually just the last episode that they have that class in. So that's there's cool. five more episodes of them talking about this.
Forensics class, I say it all the time, was my favorite class in high school.
It's a great class. So Fuller and McLaughlin each believe the killer to be someone besides Clausen after yeah. their podcast series wraps up. I'll talk about their theories as I go through the other ones.
Sure.
Like which ones they think.
Yeah.
So other suspects and theories included Edward Lee Fielder, who was an inmate serving a life term in West Virginia, who confessed but retracted and refused to cooperate to police, who were like, he's faking it for attention. Basically, he confessed to the crime and they're like,
yeah, right,
you didn't
bud.
Do this.
Yeah. And then he's like, I retract. And they're like, whoa, whoa, wait. And he's like, no, wait yourself. Like,
he's like, you can believe me.
Yeah, he's like, get out of here now. You had your chance.
This one's kind of interesting. The rock band called Ezra, E-Z-R-A, who were from New Jersey, which apparently that's where Malerick was originally from.
Mm-hmm.
But they played a show in Absecon, New Jersey. A-B-S-E-C-O-N, where two other co-eds were slain and their deaths remain unsolved. But those two murders are thought to possibly be some of the earliest murders of Ted Bundy, but they can't tie it to him exactly.
Oh, so the two other co-eds got murdered at this concert?
It was when that band was in town. They played a show, and the two other girls who were there ended up missing.
And then died. And they think Ted Bundy killed those two people.
But it's awfully weird that Ezra was there and then might have been connected to Maverick because she's also from New Jersey. It was throwing a lot of spaghetti.
I was like, are they trying to imply that the band killed these people?
Or someone who followed the band, was on the crew, was a roadie.
Did they ever come to Morgantown?
I can't find that.
Okay, well, then
the only connection I found is that Malerick is from New Jersey also.
And what?
I understand. It's very, very...
The spaghetti isn't even cooked.
It's not even cooked spaghetti. Why would it stick to the wall? You're throwing raw spaghetti at the wall. The next person on the list is William Hacker. He was arrested for the decapitation of Herbert Corbin in December of 1970. So this was the same year the girls were missing. Same year they were missing, after they were missing, yes. So McLaughlin, from the podcast series, believes Hacker needs a closer look as far as investigation because he worked in the Weirton Mine area near where the girls' bodies were found.
So and he would have known the area.
And he also decapitated someone the same year.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if they talked about...
Like a motive or anything?
Right. I don't know if they talked about him actually having a connection with the girls or just the area. Okay. I didn't listen to the whole podcast series.
No, you're fine.
So, John Brennan Crutchley is somebody who I think needs a whole episode. He was nicknamed the Vampire Rapist because he would pick up hitchhikers, drain them of blood almost to the point of death, and then rape them repeatedly.
And then decapitate?
No, he never killed anybody.
He never killed anybody.
Supposedly. He would just almost kill him.
Son of a bitch. Okay.
But his sister Carolyn lived in the building Towers 3, which is a university dorm hall just down the street from Westchester Hall, where Merritt and Karen lived while they were students.
Sure.
So, Geoff Fuller believes that they need to look closer at Crutchley.
Which Geoff Fuller's from the podcast as well.
Also, yes, correct.
And what's this guy's name? Crutchley?
Crutchley.
Because he could have been there easily if he was like, I'm going to go visit my sister.
Yeah, he could have just been there and accidentally killed them. They don't know how the girls died. Who's to say they weren't drained of their blood? And that's why there's no blood on their clothes.
And like we said before, he might not have meant to. And then the pyre thing could have been like a remorseful mm-hmm. type situation. How did he drain their blood? Was it like, if he's a vampire, was it? If it was neck, what I'm thinking is he kills them. He doesn't want any evidence, so he
just goes ahead and
cuts their heads off.
Yeah, I don't know what his actual MO was as far as draining.
Yeah.
I didn't look too much deeper into him because I knew we were already deep in the paint.
Doing spin moves and everything.
Yeah. So another possible suspect was believed to be the Mad Butcher. There's no one single person that was pinned as the Mad Butcher. This case is referred to as the Mad Butcher. In 1962, a young man was looking for bottles and hubcaps to sell, and he came across a human hand on the hillside of Golly Mountain in Oak Hill, West Virginia. As the investigation unfolded, state police collected 13 body parts flung over the hillside. A young man missing from Oak Hill named Mike Rogers was among the victims found. Investigators believe...
13 body parts?
Yes.
Not all necessarily from him.
No.
Oof.
Investigators believe the butcher notched off at least 7 victims in his spree of terror, a case that was a first of its time in many ways.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The killer had a distinct style. Roger's body was cut in ways that a surgeon or an animal butcher would sever body parts. Now, if you look into the Mad Butcher, there's a couple. There's one in Cleveland that may or may not be the same one. If he became more of a legend.
It's not, because they don't know who he is, so it's more like, the Mad Butcher murdered these 7 people. We don't know who the Mad Butcher is, but we know that's who did this.
Right, and it was more like, don't stay out after dark or the Mad Butcher will get you.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, it's tough, because it's in West Virginia, body parts were cut off. However, that seems much more, he chopped them up.
Yeah, and this was in the 60s. So, which isn't saying much, other than it's weird for West Virginia to have people being chopped up in general. So
yeah, well, it's just like the other ones, too. You'd have to look at their MOs, because none of them match exactly. Mm-hmm. So some of them are either going from almost killing people to cutting people's heads off, or they're going from literally chopping people up into various pieces to just cutting their heads off.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later? So, yeah. I don't know. It could go either way, is what I'm saying.
Right. So, a man by the name of William Wickline, W-I-C-K-L-I-N-E, was also nicknamed The Butcher, not The Mad Butcher.
Okay.
He will go down in West Virginia and Ohio's history as one of the most sadistic killers ever known to society. He was nicknamed The Butcher because he would use his prison-honed skill as a meat cutter to strategically disembowel and dismember his victims, bag the body parts, and dispose of them in areas he felt no one would look. His methods were, to some, the mark of a professional killer. One of the West Virginia State Police detectives said, he was the most dangerous criminal I've ever run into. But, again, his MO doesn't quite fit.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, if you watch any sort of detective shows, we've all heard it, that usually their crimes will escalate.
Yes.
So it also has to do with timeline, probably. And when they were killing other people versus when the co-ed murders of Karen and Merritt took place. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Because again, if this guy's disemboweling people and cutting them up, and then all of a sudden he has these 2 young ladies that he just cuts their heads off of.
Like, he wouldn't backtrack.
Right. And maybe it's the Mad Butcher and he killed all these people. And then 10 years later, he's like, I want to murder again, but I'm too old to do what I did before. So I'm just going to cut their heads off. But like, who? Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't quite make sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, none of them quite make sense to me.
Right. And some of the stuff I read said that it looked like it would have been like probably 2 cuts at most. Like, somebody got through there pretty efficiently. It wasn't like a sawed, but again, they couldn't
like
really
a surgical
tell.
Saw, yeah. So like something like what that first guy, what Clausen said, he used a machete to wax. Yeah, I don't know.
But again, can you really tell with the level of decomposition?
No, I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah. So there's also Gerard John Schaefer, who is a former Marion County, Florida police deputy, who was serving time. After, basically in 1973, he was arrested because 2 dismembered bodies turned up, and they were like...
In his car? Like,
I don't know that's all that there really was. They were like, this is like, oh, we kind of looked into the sky. We kind of looked into the sky, but these people were all cleared because nothing quite fit.
Two dismembered bodies just kind of showed up around this deputy.
Oh, no, he was responsible for them. So he was in prison. But they were like, well, if you did this,
yeah.
Did you do this?
No. My question is like, where did they find these bodies?
I couldn't
His tell. House? His car? His backpack?
Yep.
Okay. That's a whole nother story. That one makes a little more sense to me. Just like timeline-wise of 2 years earlier, he decapitated some people.
And then he dismembered
then
people.
Then he dismembered people.
Yeah, that makes more sense as far as escalation.
But I'm not a detective, so.
Who are we to say? So Merritt Malarick's dentist was also a suspect.
Whoa, okay. Now she was supposed to go see the next day?
Right, so this one's very interesting. Okay. We're gonna break this one down. This is why I kind of waited on this one.
Sure.
So, a former patient of the same dentist reported that she was molested while there for an appointment.
Fuck.
Malarick had an appointment, remember, scheduled for the next day.
Yeah.
But she went missing.
Right.
She had been given sedatives by this dentist. Some people get very anxious when they go to the dentist. So, sometimes they get a little thing, something to relax before they go.
Mm-hmm.
But supposedly, these sedatives that he prescribed were found with her belongings scattered along the hillside.
Oh, no.
So, that's how they knew that she was supposed to go there. And also, he had given her these.
Okay.
And he used to say he wasn't sedating people and molesting them.
Right.
Now, Richard Hall, the police investigator who now is basically doing PI work on this case,
mm-hmm.
he put out an ad in the Dominion Post newspaper, more recently-ish, that read, WVU co-eds allegedly molested in a Morgantown dentist office. You are not alone. Investigator needs your assistance. Info will be kept confidential. Now, he said this pertains to a woman who reported being molested by a dentist in the 1970s, and the report was never investigated by police. So, maybe Richard Hall thinks the dentist knows more about what happened and needs to be looked at further.
Because maybe he was molesting Merritt, and Merritt was going to say something. And he was like...
Or he couldn't wait until she got there.
Yeah.
He could have just picked her up. And she'd be like, oh, it's my dentist. I'll get in.
You know what I'm kind of mad about? All of this. Because these are horrible people. Richard Hall, you're keeping things a little too close to the chest.
Yep.
Because now everybody's dying with all these secrets about this murder. And Bud... I don't know how old you are, but you gotta tell somebody.
Yeah, because the Gooden and Mozingo, they've both passed.
Yeah.
They're both deceased, I believe.
Well, 1970s, if they were there.
Yeah.
They're at least older than 50.
This is the 50-year anniversary of these murders.
Right.
This year is. Yeah. So, this is 50 years later. Yeah, they're probably...
Depending on how old they were,
70s? Pushing it.
Yeah. Because now this Hall guy has, two people that he thinks
maybe
are potentially involved, but he won't name anybody?
A fellow WVU student and then possibly the dentist.
Right. But the WVU student, he's like, I'm not saying anything.
And again, I don't know if this is he's not talking to the press or if he's not talking to the police. Because the police might be... this investigation's been looked at a couple times.
Yeah, old cold case files get brought back up.
Yeah, but technically it's not a cold case file. Because Clausen was convicted of the murder.
Oh, God, yeah.
So...
Well, so did the police investigate it then?
I saw in a couple places where it was being looked at again. But that doesn't mean that it's not private investigators not...
Yeah.
The actual police.
Right.
So, like, Geoff and McLaughlin were looking into it, and they met with Richard Hall. They talked to him a lot in the podcast, I believe.
And did he say, well, I can't tell you?
I don't know. I didn't listen to it all.
Oh, this guy's making me so mad.
Anyway, the last suspect is a, quote, unidentified stranger.
Who put this on the list?
Just wait. Let me get it out. A resident of Weirton Mine Road, near where the girls' bodies were found, reported that a stranger borrowed a pickaxe and a shovel 2 days after the girls went missing and did not return the tools.
What did he look like?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
Yep, I don't know.
Short blonde-haired man in his early 40s, driving a red... No, cream car.
Oh, why didn't... I wonder if this person was showing a picture of Clausen.
Yeah, but you said Clausen didn't look like him.
He didn't look like the person they thought was in the car.
Yeah.
But could it have been the stranger? We don't... This stranger in the house? Could have been. I don't know.
I'm just thinking they're all the same person, but you're right. Maybe they got in a car and the guy was fine and dropped them off at their apartment building and they got attacked right there. Yeah. I guess I wasn't thinking about that. Oh, I'm not looking at the bigger picture. I need a cork board and red string.
And red string, I know. So, the entire investigation would be nicknamed the co-ed murders. And again, co-eds are the female students at co-educational institutions. That's the actual definition that I have put at the end, where it's not helpful because we've already been talking about it this entire time.
But the co-ed murders are specifically about Karen and Merritt.
Now you have to be careful, because if you look up co-ed murders, it will show you other murders.
Oh.
These are the WVU co-ed murders.
WVU co-ed, okay.
Or the podcast is called, like, Merritt and Karen WVU co-ed murders.
Right.
But that's this specific podcast title. There's not a whole lot of podcasts out there on it. Now, Appalachian Crime Trail, which our friend Kirsten did, they did a segment on this in one of their episodes. I forget what episode number it was, but I know that they had put that out there, too. Right. It was called West Virginia Murder Mama, was the episode, which I thought was funny, instead of Mountain Mama.
Yeah.
But, again, this six-part series by Fuller and McLaughlin, and then Kendall Perkinson, the other guy who does Chromatic, they were really passionate about this. They worked really hard on it. And, you know, other than their podcast series, it's hard to find a ton of information. You can look at the court documents of why he was appealing. I had trouble finding the court document of his conviction.
Clausen,
yes.
Okay. I don't know. There's too many other suspects for me that are of interest that weren't investigated thoroughly enough to just say, nope, they got him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not satisfied at all. And I think most people are.
And maybe it was him. But there's still so many other people that I need to question. So grab your gear. No, I'm just kidding.
So one of the most interesting resources for me going through this was Web Sleuths.
Okay.
And I know that's not super reliable, but Web Sleuths is like a website where people say, this is a mystery that occurred. If you know any information about this, I'd love to talk to you about it.
Sure.
And it's basically a discussion board. Also Reddit. Reddit was great too. But it's a discussion board of, this is the resource I found, and this is what it said. Does anybody have anything different?
Right.
And people, like, just talk about it. And that's where, you
know, try to confirm information. Well, this piece of information is what everybody has, so that must be...
Or this doesn't make sense because of here.
Right.
And that's where I found the, like, breakdown of his driving from Philadelphia.
So it doesn't make sense.
People were like, okay, but they knew the area, and they could say, okay, but if you went from here to here, it would take this long.
Well, you have to think, too. I mean, like, I don't know what it was like in the 1970s, but we're giving him a lot of we are saying that he's making it there in pretty quick time, because if you're not counting traffic, stoplights, tolls, all the way from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh and back, like, there's no way he made it. We're saying he made it there at 10:30 at the earliest.
Yeah.
And that's like he had to get out of a car and immediately steal the car that was right in front of him and turn around and drive back.
Yeah. It just, it doesn't, I know I don't have all the details, but it doesn't add up. And there's so many flaws in it that it just doesn't. And so in the Supreme Court file, if you want to read it, I attached it here, this appeal. They've even state, like, you can't count the hair evidence because the beautician
said that she
said that, so it's not reliable evidence. You can't count that against him.
Yeah.
So they're throwing stuff out anyway. I don't quite understand his second conviction, and maybe I'm wrong because I can't find the actual result of the second trial. Yeah. I'm sure they say it on the other podcasts or on the six-part series.
Right.
But he died in prison still saying he was innocent.
Right.
That to me is you were still convicted.
Yeah. They didn't overturn his conviction.
Yeah. Because I don't, unless he was in jail for the other two things, but why would he still be saying I didn't do that?
Yeah.
If he was innocent by the court.
Right.
So, it's very confusing sorting through it all. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's a confusing investigation.
Yeah.
And I hope it made sense.
I don't know. No offense to... I don't think all of the police officers that were on it were bad. Clearly, there were some that were being manipulated by higher-ups
mm-hmm.
that caused issues for the entirety of the investigating team. And so, I definitely think that probably hurts because you're not going to get accurate information or evidence at all.
Yeah, I mean, the psychic cult. The psychic science church was the clearest evidence he had, and they weren't helpful at all.
Yeah, and why weren't they looked into a little bit further? I mean, I'm sure they were, because they were cleared, but they were the only ones that knew where the bodies were?
I didn't really know. They sent the letters, but they were, like, miles off.
That's true. Maybe that was the plan.
I mean, that was Dr. Spencer. That wasn't even the reverend's fault.
Yeah, where's this ghost from London? Interesting.
I think they should have used his expertise a little more.
I do too. Let's call him again.
Right now.
Here we go.
I wonder if in the 6-part series podcast, if they try and contact Dr. Spencer, because I think that is something that we still need to look into.
Yeah, I agree.
Confusing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it made sense the way I laid it out, although...
The only thing that's confusing is you don't know who did it.
Nope. I don't think Clausen did.
I don't think Clausen did either. Does it feel right?
Does it?
Doesn't feel right.
If I had to take a gamble.
Are you feeling it now, Mr. Krabs?
No, I'm not. I'm more inclined to say it was Ezra, the rock band, than...
I was very confused by that one. I don't... That... That one doesn't make sense to me at all.
No, but there's people on Reddit and Web Sleuths who think they're good people to look at. Which I'm not saying all these are credible people that were looked into. I'm saying these are ideas that have been thrown out because everybody's grasping at straws.
Well, and I think some of them are good things to look at, though.
Yeah, because how do you not take a look at, you know, the dentist or... Mm-hmm. The vampire rapist and mm-hmm. say, this hits a little too close for home for us to not be curious.
Right. I agree.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. So, will this story keep you up at night, or do you think you'll still be able to sleep as snug as a bug in a rug?
I don't know. Maybe a little of both. I think I'll be okay once I watch some TikToks. No, it's creepy because it's, I mean, where we've grown up, but also I don't hitchhike, so.
And you won't now. You won't start now.
Oh, no, I would never. And anyway, because the possibility of dying's up there, but it's also the possibility of having to make small talk with a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not capable of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm terrified of my upcoming hair appointment.
Because you have to interact with people.
So.
I think that I'm curious mostly to see... Not mostly. I'm curious to see whether these events significantly dropped the number of students that were hitchhiking.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure that it did.
Yeah.
But I wonder
how it was more like... I know it sounds dumb, but make sure you have, like, 3 people hitchhiking make sure you have a big beefy boy with you that can, or a girl who knows MMA, or somebody that knows karate, so, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, go in groups, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Well, it's scary, isn't it? Because there's no, they weren't alone. Like, they were with a friend.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You have to get...
And it still didn't matter.
That's why I said 3 or more, or somebody mm-hmm. that could Judy chop a bitch, because...
Judy chop.
Anyway, it's frustrating that the investigation didn't go as quickly as I wished it would have.
Oh, I think they dropped the ball in a big, fat way. Big, fat...
At least at the beginning, juicy, when they just were like, we're gonna ignore this tip.
Big, fat, juicy way.
Yeah.
It wasn't even at the beginning. That's 3 months later that they waited for her to actually even do anything.
Oh, well, I'm just saying even after the first tip. Because if you can't find anything, I totally get it. Although, what did they do at the beginning?
Maybe they looked, maybe they didn't. And, yeah, and I don't know. Like, they definitely...
Because the governor's administrator was telling that guy to tell that to hide evidence showing that they did jack shit, so... I don't know.
I think jack shit's generous, considering they did nothing, but... Anyway, yeah.
Who do you think did it? Who are your top two that you think need to be investigated further?
I don't think it was Clausen. I think the dentist needs looked into for sure. Like, for sure.
Yeah.
Just in general, not even... If it turns out this has nothing to do with it...
Well, he's like, still molesting people in the dentist office, so...
Yeah, giving them sedatives and then possibly molesting them.
Yeah.
I think he's a big person to be looking into. And then I think that, although I didn't listen to their entire podcast, I think Fuller and McLaughlin probably have pretty good reasons why they think that Hacker and Crutchley need looked into.
Yeah. Which one are those two again? The vampire guy?
The vampire guy and... Hacker's the one who decapitated somebody nearby in that area.
Oh, that's right. He was a minor. Yep. That one makes sense.
Around the same time.
Yep.
So, like...
The police officer one's up there on my list, too.
Yeah.
The deputy that chopped up a guy, that later that year?
Yeah. Now, I mean, he was from Florida, and I don't know what area that crown was in, that crime was in, but...
He still was here, working.
I don't know if that's true. He was a deputy in Florida.
Oh.
I don't know why they think he's tied to this case as far as, like...
Just kidding. I thought he was working here.
No.
Why is he a suspect,
then? I don't know.
Interesting.
It was interesting trying to pull things from websites talking about this other podcast or websites talking about, like, Reddits and Web Sleuths and things like this, where people are trying to piece together information themselves.
Sure.
And it kind of just makes it a nice little community of people who are dissatisfied with the outcome of this so far.
Yeah, it needs investigated further, that's for sure.
So, listeners out there, who do you think it was? I'm interested to know. I'd like to know what Kirsten thought, too, because they talked about this, and I'd be interested to see if they call it an unsolved case, or if they agree it was Clausen, or if they have other ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let us know. You can reach out to us at Twitter and Instagram, BIAR Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Our Facebook is Bug in a Rug. You can find all of my resources posted at...
buginarug.podbean.com.
Yep, and our email is...
BIARpodcast@gmail.com.
Reach out to us. We'll send you a sticker.
Mm-hmm.
If you've seen the Hitcher, I'm really sorry. Let us know. We'll send you a sticker.
Mm-hmm.
And let us know what you think. Thanks, Seth, for the suggestion.
Sure. Sorry to send us more suggestions.
To put it together. Wanted to do it justice.
Yeah.
A long one.
It's all good, all good. All right. Well, I guess that's the end of the episode. So, signing off, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Whitney.
Bye.
Sleep tight.